What about WTMA, the transmitter site? That's always been at Orange Grove Road, right?
The tower was out in the marsh in Wagner Terry.
So they moved to Orange Grove Road later?
That happened much later. That happened after I was gone.
Now, why did the station move from Wagner Terrace to the Dock Street Theater?
I guess the newspapers was just around the corner. And I think that they thought it was a better site, easier access for the people that worked there, and a better site for people that were coming into the station to be interviewed or to do business. One block over was Meeting Street. One block over was King Street. And it was the lower end of King up to Calhoun that where all the retail business took place. Up above that was nothing much. If you went in the other direction, over to State and East Bay Street, that was where all the wholesale business were down in that area. And then, of course, one block and you were on Broad Street, two blocks and you were at the courthouse or the four corners of the law where you had the city hall and county offices, post office on the other corner and then St. Michael's on the other. And so it really was in the center of business. Most anybody of any importance would probably have an office in that area.
Now, did they require a transmitter engineer at all times? Or was the station operated by remote control?
For a number of years, they had a transmitter operation, and I don't remember when they changed over to remote control, but I know they did have one.
Now, I've heard WTMA was just 1,000 watts at the time. Right now, the station's 5,000 watts.
We went into a hearing against a station in Savannah to get a better channel down in the low sixes.
They must have won because there's a station there at 630.
That was a frequency that was trying, I think, 630. We went all over hell and back in automobiles having these hearings in local communities and taking depositions. That was my job to organize to get the lawyer and go around and do all this. We had Old Man's Wife, very famous Charleston family, and also a lawyer. And then I had a younger lawyer who was a friend of mine. He acted as the judge in all of the hearings. We lost out to Harbin Daniel out of Savannah. It took a long time before we got over 1,000 watts, and I don't remember when that happened.
Why exactly did you decide to leave the radio station?
I got conned into going into business, into an advertising business. This customer of mine was already in it. He was a manager of one of the big furniture stores on King Street. He had put some money into it, and he had this young fellow who was supposed to be running it and whatnot. And it looked like a great deal to me. It was a combination agents. Up to the time I got into it, they weren't doing a whole hell of a lot except selling novelty items, you know, like calendars and thermometers and pencils and yardsticks and that sort of stuff. When I got into it, I had several accounts, including Charleston Famous Garden, W.T. Smith, Van Smith Building Materials and whatnot. So I went into it thinking that this was going to be a good thing. Well, the people I got associated with hadn't paid any damn bills in years, and they had a very spotty record, so my little capital was exhausted in a hurry. But I stayed in it for 5 years, and during that time, I went totally deaf. And that was the thing that made me decide to get out of that business and go to work for some big company where if I didn't have to hear too well, and I did what I was supposed to do, then everything would work out all right. So I went to work for the South Carolina Electric and Gas Company.
What was a typical day like when you were program director of WTMA?
My job was to work out all of the schedule for all of the announcers. And my job was to be sure that all of the scripts that were needed were put together. That was the basic thing. Plus, of course, I took a shift, too. Mr. Bradham, bless his heart, he loved the girls. I don't mean that in an ugly way. I mean, he was just apparently fascinated with them because he had so many of them around now. No hanky-panky, but that was his way. And he had all these copywriters. Now, I'm program director, and I'm supposed to be responsible for the copy and all. Yet when I talked to one of the girls, she gave me a whole lot of back talk, you know. And so the chain of command was not defined as tightly as it should have been. And so you had to work around these things, you know. You had to almost beg people to do what the hell they were supposed to, this kind of business. So that was not very much fun. I had one little old girl, poor little old girl in the office one day, and I said something to her. She says, "You do your job and I'll do mine."
What about WTMA FM? Did that come on during your time?
Yeah, it barely came on. We had a studio around the corner when it first started in the German Friendly Society building up in the top floor. We would put on the minimum broadcast required at that time. The FCC required that you put on so many hours a week or whatever. WTMA kind of backed into it. They weren't really enthused about it. They weren't going to put any money into it. They were going to let somebody else find out how good it was. And so, of course, the saturation of FM sets was very, very poor. I mean, you couldn't make any money out of that.
What about being treated as a local celebrity? Did you get a lot of that because there wasn't any TV stations on in the 40s?
Oh, yeah, man.
And only two radio stations.
I was a big shot. I met some people, would you believe it? I was in a restaurant here in the last year, and these two ladies came up and introduced themselves and said, "Aren't you Franz Witte?" I said, "We used to listen to you on WTMA all the time. We'd love to hear your voice." So, yeah, we got a lot of that. And anything that happened in town, the radio celebrities were usually invited because somebody wanted us to cover it. If you were a personality, you could help them. So I got invited to everything you could think of. I don't think I missed a major meeting of any kind anyway.
Did you guys swap announcers with WCSC, or were you guys fairly competitive? And if you worked for WCSC,
very,
you
very
stayed there for years.
Some of the guys on WCSC, like Russ Long, for example, I knew him for years. He's a nice guy. He just died the other day. But we'd be covering election returns. We'd go down to the core headquarters, and old Russ would give you a damn elbow in a minute to get you out the way so he could interview somebody. But it was pretty competitive. All the way down the line and in the sales, they had a salesman called Jack Hearn. I don't know if you ever heard of Jack, but he's the biggest con artist in the world. I like Jack. He was making deals constantly with everybody called on him. He'd have cigars. He'd have golf balls. He'd had anything you want Jack could get. I think what he was doing, he was giving these guys some free time for some free samples. He was a real character. But most of those people were very nice. John Rivers was a nice man. And I auditioned for WCSC before I auditioned for WTMA. They had an Irish program director, and this boy was an Irishman. It was my competition. So I say that's why he got the job, because I didn't think he was half as good as I was. It was nice. It got kind of hot sometimes. But generally speaking, we got along pretty good, you know. Old man Hall T. McGee was the general manager of the newspapers, and he was a nice fella. I remember we had a problem. Ralph McKay, who was an ex-FBI agent, came back to Charleston, quit his job, and became chief of the county police. Well, we had a real scandalous situation, and he was trying to clean it up, but they cleaned him up. They framed him up. So Ralph came to me one day, and he said, "Franz, I'd known him since we'd both been in Boy Scout camp back in the 30s. He says, "I got this problem." He said, "I understand that your station, WTMA, has a recorder." I said, "Yep, we got a wire recorder." He said, "Would it be possible for me to borrow that so I can set this guy up who's been framing me and prove he'd been framing me?" I thought about that thing. I said, "Ralph, I'd love to fight this off." I'd say yes. But I said, "I'd have to go through a whole lot of people." And he says, "Well, why don't you just go right to the top? Just bypass them all, because you don't want to get involved in all that." I said, "That's a good idea." So I went over Mr. Bradham's head, went to see Mr. Hall T. McGee. Now, he's the big manager for the whole damn Post Courier Company, and talked to him, went to see him on a Sunday. And he says, "Mr. Witte," says, "I sympathize with what you want to do. I think it's a great idea, but we can't afford to have the station involved in anything if this should be discovered. Now, he's the first place he asked me, he said, "Why did you come to me? Why didn't you go to your boss?" I said, "Because I didn't want to have too many people in on the deal. I wanted to get the final authority immediately." He said, "You did right there. I'll let you make the decision to whether or not you want to lend him this equipment, but it'll be your decision. I know nothing about it. Nobody in the company knows anything about it." So I did. I lent it to Ralph McKay, and he used it over a weekend, and unfortunately, when he returned it, he says there was so much noise in the car that I couldn't really get very much. Now, if he'd had a little old tape recorder like he'd buy for $10 from Radio Shack, he could have gotten all that stuff.
Now, what did you all use the wire recorder? How was it actually used in daily or weekly use at WTMA?
Well, he used it to go out and interview people primarily.
And then when you would bring it back to the radio station, you'd hook it up to the board and play it back?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was not half as nice as the tape recorders, because it was always jumping off the track or doing something like that. It was the first thing that came out, was really the first recorder that anybody could use.
Now, were you all set up to record acetates at the radio station?
Yeah, record on acetate on these discs. Weren't very good, but we did. And then after you got them, it didn't last very long either. We recorded stuff for the Spiritual Society. I remember we used to come down and sing. We did special recordings for special people, not a whole lot of it sometimes. And when we wanted to send a particular program or something away from the company to a client or to our rep, then sometimes we would record it and send it. It was very limited.
What do you think WTMA has meant or means to Charleston?
It's always been a pretty good station, except for one period when it was bought out. I had left the station at that time. A fellow named Smith bought it out.
Chuck Smith.
I was working for the electric and gas company. Smith was quite an operator. I mean, you couldn't trust him any farther than you could throw him, and he was right bulky. I had several run-ins with him when I was buying advertising for the company and whatnot. You know, I'd buy a series of spots, and salesmen would come in and say, okay, we're going to give you, say, 10, 15 in the middle of this, whatever time. And so I'd get my recorder out. I had a portable tape recorder, and when the time came for my commercials, I'd record them, and I'd go for weeks and never get one. And this guy had done a sales job on my boss, and he was a big shot, and he liked to be treated like a big shot, you know, and this kind of stuff. And so this guy was playing up to him. And so I told my boss, I said, we got to get rid of this guy because he's not doing what he says he's going to do. He's not running the copy I'm giving him. He's not running times we're paying for. He said, oh, no, it couldn't be. So I sat down and recorded all of this, and I went and played it to him. Then he believed. Then he calls the guy in and let me fire him. Well, the damn guy made an attempt to turn it around on me, tried to get me fired. But anyhow, that's another story. That was a bad period for WTMA.
What era are we talking about? What years?
We're talking in the early 50s.
Okay. Well, you know, Ted Turner owned WTMA for a little while.
Yeah, I knew Ted Turner personally. Dad used to know his daddy. His daddy used to invite me and the kids to go hunting on his place down in Yemassee. Matter of fact, when he used to come down here and sail in the Carolina Yacht Club Regattas and whatnot, my wife and I walked down there, and there was Ted coming up to the dock. He says, Franz, you old son of a bitch. But he's had an amazing career. His father committed suicide because of financial things. He owned the Savannah Outdoor Advertising. He bought the Charleston Outdoor Advertising. Then he bought the Atlanta Outdoor Advertising. And he got so involved in the finance, he thought he was going to lose it all. But his daddy was a real fine man. He really was. I liked old Ed. When this boy got it, he just was made of different stuff. He wasn't going to let any damn thing get ahead of him. He's a real competitor. And he did it. He was the one that put that damn little station he had over in Atlanta. The sales manager for WTMA when I was there, Walter Spade, he became the manager of the station that Ted eventually bought over there.
Now looking back from your 80s at the time at WTMA, how would you describe it?
Oh, it was a wonderful experience because radio was fairly new back in those days, and I got to do everything. I got to do the whole works. I got to write the copy, got to write the shows, I got to put the shows on, be a part of them. I got to go out and sell it. I got involved in all kinds of public relations activities related to show. It was just a really wonderful time. I don't know how it is today. Then you could do anything you wanted. Sky was the limit. You just picked what you wanted to do and you did it.